guys, it's me, Ariana Mendez, your host, coming to you from Miami, Florida. Welcome to another episode of Right Out Politics. This is not your dad's political news show, so don't expect any spin here. Today, we're going to talk about the two town hall events that were held by ABC News and NBC News. One was held for Biden, one was held for Trump. Both men were originally scheduled to debate each other, but when the debate commission came out and said that the debate would go virtual, Trump decided he was not going to participate. So Biden booked an event with ABC, and then NBC reached out to Trump, and a town hall event was scheduled with him in Miami. So we're going to talk about the two town halls, how the two men did, what they said, how the moderator interacted with each of the men, and what was the dynamics? What does this mean for the race? I mean, it's always interesting to see both men on TV. It's always entertaining to see Trump on television. So what happened? What can we take away from this? And what's the effect on the November election? So to help me discuss these issues, I'm going to welcome back to the show Carlos Fernandez, historian and interior designer in the Miami area and a friend of the show, to chat politics with me. So let's jump right in. Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. How are you?
Good. So did you watch the town halls last night?
I watched a town hall last night, and guess which one I watched?
Oh, Trump?
Of course. I mean,
he was also in Miami, which is our home city.
Yes, and he was also at the Perez Art Museum Miami, which is an iconic building in Miami, as opposed to watching Sleepy Joe and his very stupid, easy questions town hall situation. You know, the funny thing is that his was a real town hall. Trump was just debating the moderator last night.
Yeah, Trump does that a lot, right?
Mm. Well, I mean, seriously, it gets to a point where you're just like, are we going to let the voters ask the questions, or are you just going to continuously attack the president and keep asking stupid questions?
Well, I thought it was so annoying. So just to set it up for people, this was hosted by NBC. It was a town hall style forum in Miami, Florida, outside, by the way. Everybody was socially distant, and there was an introduction period where Savannah Guthrie from NBC asked questions, kind of got Trump warmed up for the audience questions. But when she turned it over to the people seated around them, they would ask the question, and then she interrupts to ask her follow-up question. And I'm just looking at her going, I don't care about your follow-up question. Let him answer the voters' question, what they care about, not your little twisted talking point question.
Well, I also thought that it was kind of like, I'm so happy that the white supremacy conversation was one of the first questions on the actual thing, and I loved his answer. You know, you guys keep bringing this crap up, and I've already denounced them like 85 million times.
Well, and also, they don't ask Biden about Antifa.
And that was a classic. That was a good classic rebuke.
Well, that was a body slam, because honestly, I've just had enough of hearing about, oh, you failed to denounce. I just denounced it. No, you failed to denounce. You hesitated. You breathed a little bit too much before you answered. That means you hesitate. It's just like ridiculous.
No kidding.
Like, and then, by the way, I just want to point out, this is kind of petty, but Biden's town hall was inside a building. Trump's was outside. Technically, Trump's was safer. I just want to point that out.
Well, I just thought it was, first of all, as a person who, you know, debates, whether we like it or not, are moneymakers, because they are places, they provide venues, they provide jobs to everyone helping out in those venues, and yada yada, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It was good to know that Trump came to Miami anyway, because it brought money and dollars here, and Biden decided that he was going to go away. And so in my viewpoint, Biden both said, I'm not going to debate you, and then even sucker punched Miami further by saying, and I'm not even going to hold an event down here. So I hope that all Miamians and Floridians understand exactly where Biden stands as far as how he cares about our state.
Biden is just lackluster. He's lackluster campaigning. He's lackluster on the debate stage. He's lackluster in every venue. With that said, every time he's being interviewed by the left-wing media, it's a softball question. Softball, softball. How do you feel? How does that make you feel? Are you okay? Do you need a cup? Do you need a cup of water? That sort of thing. And then Trump gets basically ganged up on by not just the moderator, but anybody else that wants to jump in.
Yeah, and I think that because of how she moderated that town hall, this stark contrast between the two town halls couldn't be more apparent. I mean, no, I mean, the most simple-minded person can understand, wow, well, Biden had a lot of great questions. It was very, very, oh, look at that. It was very civil. And then they look at the NBC town hall and they're like, oh, this is like a fight. I
Get
mean,
your popcorn.
get the popcorn out. And I think the other issue is that, and you know, NBC got a lot of flack from its own producers. The producers started to protest because they couldn't believe that there was going to be a simultaneous town hall between the two town halls and NBC was going to host Trump.
Well, I thought it was interesting how MSNBC, the cable
Yeah.
news, specifically Rachel Maddow, she actually apologized to her audience because the airing of Trump's debate actually bled into her show's block, and she was apologizing that her fa you know her family company NBC was hosting the debate, and that was something everybody had to see. And I'm looking at that dynamic going, really? Are we? Is that where you're going? Is what was so wrong about Trump's town hall? Oh, he fought back, and he looked well, and he looked strong, and he looked up to the task. That's the problem. You didn't like the optics of
Well,
it.
if anything we learned from NBC tonight, last night, was that NBC loves ratings. NBC loves Trump, because it provides more money and more viewership to their station. Because honestly, if you had to rate the two town halls, and I admit I did not watch the other one, but I can guarantee you, and I can almost predict how that town hall went, Trump's is always more entertaining.
Well, Trump just seems alive, in control, up to the task. It's just the full package. I was As a Trump voter, I was really satisfied with his performance last night. I thought that he was kind to the people in the audience asking the questions. He was respectful, but he took Guthrie up to the challenge. Like, he wasn't letting her get away with any misconceptions or and fighting her premises, which I think is very important for Republicans when talking to the media. You need to fight the premise of questions, because if not, they control the narrative.
Exactly. And I think the other thing is that I love what he said when she started bringing up the COVID responses and how the United States was faltering in the world stage as far as deaths per 1,000. And he was like, I knew you were going to go there. So I have all this other statistical data that refutes what you're saying. So,
And that shut her up.
yeah, no kidding. I mean, for a newscaster and a commentator and a journalist to ask these poignant questions at a town hall is just unprofessional and unpolite. It's like,
But they actually, the NBC News had an article on their website where they actually went there and said that Guthrie had done a good job holding the president accountable, but never became partisan. And I'm reading that going, what? Did we watch the same
No,
thing?
exactly. I mean, to be honest, there was no such thing as nonpartisan line of questioning in her rebukes to the president. And I think, like I said, the town hall speaks for themselves. You cannot tell me in any shape, way, or form that Biden's town hall included tough questions, intuitive questions that Biden couldn't answer or was unwilling to answer or couldn't be more poignant. No, you could never sell that to me because I knew what that was going to be like, especially ABC. Come on. It's like, oh, you didn't answer that question, but it's okay, Biden. We're just not going to go there. We're going to go to the next question. I promise it's easier.
Do you want a juice box?
And then Trump's first question right off the bat is like, you did a horrible job in COVID, so this is a situation. Why the hell did you do that?
Yeah. Oh, and you look so well. And the way she says, oh, you look so well. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not what you wanted, right?
Yeah.
You wanted him coming in here pale and decrepit and so that you can comment on that. It's a no-win situation for him.
No, exactly. And I think, like I said, the conspiracy, now the entire perception of how the media treats him has been completely, fully displayed today. I mean, it was. I mean, it's not a Fox News commentator who did this. It wasn't, you know, if Fox did this, we would say, oh, well, it was a, you know, it was friendly. Exactly. But this is NBC. They are hostile. And they were, and they showed themselves to be hostile. So there you go. At the end of the day, this is what's challenging in this election is going to be the fact that you have news outlets that are just not ever going to let him have a fair trial as far as what he does.
So I have an announcement. I've already voted for Trump. I already sent in my ballot.
Yeah, okay. So... Yeah, well, at least, okay, you should tell everyone it was an absentee ballot, not a mail-in ballot.
Well, no, it's the opposite. It's the mail-in.
You did a mail-in ballot?
In Florida. Yeah. Oh. In Florida, there's no such thing as absentee ballots. We have mail-in ballots. Oh.
I decry that decision on your part, but that's okay.
Hey, I am busy and COVID, and I trust the Florida system. It's one of the more well-thought-out ones.
Yes, but I will be voting as I always do, as I always have in tradition at 7 in the morning on voting day.
Well, I think it's interesting because there's some stats that are indicating that a lot of Democrats are doing mail-in voting in Florida, and in which I say a lot of Republicans are actually doing what you're going to do. They don't trust that process because of all the controversy surrounding it, and now they're going to go in person.
Correct.
So it's actually a reversal because in the past, Republicans used to do in Florida – were much more enthusiastic about mail-in ballots, and now you have them saying, no, I'm going to go in person, which is it's a 180 from a historical political behavior.
Well, I mean, it's – okay. So we've all been through the process of governmental agencies. Let's see. We've been to the post office. We have done – I mean, to tell me that these agencies are robust enough – to handle an election where you're going to get not a couple hundred thousand votes, not a couple million votes, no, approximately anywhere between 100 to 200 million votes.
Right.
And you're going to say there's not going to be any quirks or hiccups with that. No. I don't believe that. That is like me trusting my government with my healthcare, which I have not done.
And please don't.
Yes.
Which was another thing they asked Trump about, which was Obamacare. And here's the thing. He's not talking about removing pre-existing conditions protection.
Well, he never has. He never has. That's the issue. He never said at any moment that I don't believe pre-existing conditions should not be a thing. He wants to just get rid of the mandate. He wants to get rid of the structure of which it exists. That's all he wants to do. He likes the protections. He likes the certain legalities of it. He just hates the entire agency.
And I think that's extremely important to emphasize. So this, and he says it, I'm a new type of Republican.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how we're watching the Republican Party literally change to Trump's image. And I think that's going to be a very interesting dynamic as we move forward post Trump. What happens to the Republican Party? Does it continue to be the Trumpian Party, or was that just a one time or a phenomenon specific to the candidate?
I compare him to a populist president from, like, let's say the first three presidents of the 20th century would be similar to what's going on now. So I think that what you're going to get is the party is going to be forever changed as far as their as far as what they stand for. But the personalities will start to temper as we move from president to president. Like, for example, you had The first of the progressive presidents would be Theodore Roosevelt, and then you had Taft, and then you have Woodrow Wilson, right? So, of course, you can obviously see a temperament of the populism to decrease with each president who comes into power. So I think that this is going to be the he's going to be this is game changing as far as what where the parties are at and where their beliefs are, where they hold their beliefs. But ultimately, the you can't, you know, Trump is Trump. You can't, you're not going to get another Trump. He's once in a generation president as far as his ego and his showmanship. You're not going to get that from another one. I mean, and that's okay, because obviously, honestly, in American history, I think we can only take one of those presidents every decade or so.
Yeah, it's a force of nature.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a pendulum, right? So you go from very, very active, very open and very honest presidents to more reserved and more statesman-like presidents. And I think the pendulum obviously flew way too far to the statement-like presidents with the with the last three ones, right? I would even say the last three, with Clinton, Bush, and Obama. So now we're going into an era of honest politics, is what I would call it.
And I also think it's that famous political term, cult of personality, right? There's sometimes candidates, political figures, they're so galvanizing that people support the ideas because it's that particular person's platform. If somebody else took on that mantle, it may not have been as effective as getting those voters.
Oh, no kidding.
I
think, yeah.
Well, it was interesting because you actually saw that in full force last night in the town hall. I think at some point, President Trump was answering questions, and you had this lady, daughter of immigrants from Eastern Europe, if I recall. And she complimented on the president and said, good evening, Mr. President, or something like that. I have to say you have a great smile. And I just thought it was funny because it was her complimenting the president. Imagine if it had been the other way around. I mean, the media would be like, oh, Me Too movement, sexual harassment. And no, she was kind of hitting on him.
Well, there you go. Melania, be careful.
Yes. Eastern Europe gals are something to watch out for.
No, I think the I you know, it's incredible, because the cult of, if you look at the cult of personality and who he is, you're absolutely right. The Republican Party has taken a mantle that they hadn't taken since, and we know this because we come from the establishment Republican era. We've been Republicans for far longer than Trump has, to a certain extent, right? And and as far as that goes, he has, but he's really cherished our hearts, because what he did is exactly what I was hoping we would do back 10, 15 years ago. If you remember, we had this discussion where the Republican Party needs to get more aligned with more people. And I think that's what this president does. He allows the conservative argument to penetrate no longer just the white male voter. It now penetrates the minority voter. It penetrates the suburban voter. It penetrates the disenfranchised voter. And it does so without one iota of spending.
It's just a message.
It's wonderful. Is like, I don't want to pay you. I want you to pay yourself. And I want to give you that opportunity.
I think it's an entertaining turn, because historically, and you know, I did when I got a master's in political science and I studied rhetoric. And there's always been a criticism of the Republican Party that your rhetoric does not attract minorities. And we just see the actual opposite, where you have rhetoric that on the surface could be seen as anti-minority actually crossing over and pulling people in that otherwise would not come into the party.
And that's a good segue to the next thing I was going to bring up. Did we all look at that wonderful black woman in the back just giving the thumbs up to the president every single time?
Oh, I loved her. I loved her. She was great. And I think NBC probably would not have placed her there if they knew that she was going to be as encouraged.
Here's a black woman, and oh my God, I've not seen this. It's hilarious. Here's a black woman, and by the way, she was a wonderfully dressed woman with a matching mask, might I add. And she was giving thumbs up and clapping every single time the president responded to any of the questions that either the moderator or the voter was to their questions. So it was just a wonderful night. I thought that he did a great job. He was tempered and he was incredibly direct in his answers. I thought that he was very and at the same time he said thank you like 15 times. If I didn't count them, but it sounded like he said thank you 15 times, even to the moderator, which she didn't deserve one iota of thank yous, to be honest with you.
Well, he was gracious. I think you don't see that side of Trump on TV on most occasions, but he was gracious, and he seemed to be in control of the facts, and he was confident, and he looked strong. Yeah. And that was encouraging to see. I know for a fact I was very concerned after his diagnosis was reported, so that was encouraging.
Yeah, and I also love what he said about peaceful transitions of power. And he said, Adam, he just said, I'm for peaceful transfer of power. But the difference is I also want to make sure that the election is done properly. And I will go to the high court if necessary. I mean, that's what I heard when he said that. So, I mean, that's something that people don't understand. It's not like there's going to be a war of any kind or there's going to be any fights about this. It's simply that he's going to sue and he will go to Supreme Court with his lawsuit if the election shows any signs that it's going to be fraudulent.
But here's the thing, and he made a legitimate point. Since the moment he was elected, they've been trying to get him out of office, they being the media and the left. So when they ask him about peaceful transitions, maybe they should be asking the left those questions.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they're the ones that didn't accept the results with any type of closure or acceptance. It was more, oh, no, we need to find a way to get him out.
Yeah, and it's just, it's astounding to me. And by the way, I also hate those questions about healthcare. You know what would have helped President Trump in making kind of a plan for healthcare and maybe other plans for the legislature? If the legislator just couldn't stop impeaching him for an entire year. It's like, oh, you don't have a plan. Well, I couldn't have one because it takes Congress to pass a plan and they were too busy impeaching me.
Yeah, I just want to point that out for the record, folks.
I mean, that's something I wish you would said. I think I wish I would have loved someone to say that. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, after my 4 years in office, what an entire year wasted in impeachment hearings. We didn't. I mean, that's kind of ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing. He probably would have been much more involved in the COVID first response if he wasn't doing impeachment stuff. Because people have to remember, in early January, February,
we were still impeachment.
Well, we were. Yes, that was the focus on in every conversation at every level of government. That was the focus.
And
so who do I blame for any type, and I don't think he did a bad job. On the contrary, I think he was proactive. But if there's any criticism as far as response time or approach, I'm blaming Nancy Pelosi.
Well, and the other thing is that I love this, and the problem is that I think Democrats have like short-term memory loss. I think that I just don't understand. So at the time where he shut down he had a Chinese travel ban and then the European travel ban, then everybody wanted some sort of like mandatory mask. And the thing is that in Biden's own words back in the early part of this pandemic said, I don't think he has the constitutional ability to do that. Mm-hmm. And everyone was thinking that he was going to become a tyrant because this means that he can get an emergency powers and use it against everybody. And he didn't. He tried to do it as constitutional as possible. He let the states take control of their own destinies. He allowed states to do as they needed. He complains. Yes, he does. He will complain if he feels that a state is not doing its proper due diligence with the reopening. And he does complain when the medical fields are just providing solutions that will basically destroy the economy. So it's, you know, he is doing his absolute best in trying to maintain, because what people don't understand is we're not a centralized government like France. We're not like them. We're not this, the president does not have the power to mandate anything without state consent.
Well, and also I would say that there's a bit of hypocrisy there, because you can't say that he's a fascist dictator on one hand and then say he's not doing enough to control the states and how they react to COVID. You can't have it both ways.
And I think that that's something also missing from these town hall, quote unquote, debates. So I think that no one talks about the hypocrisy of the other side. And I, you know, it's absolutely right. Biden should be getting a lot tougher questions than what he's getting. I mean, do you denounce Antifa? That's the first question I think most conservatives want to hear from him. And second, I think the next question should be, at what point do you feel that the president has power and does not have power? What could President Trump have done in his constitutional power to mitigate this crisis? And I want a full list of what he could have done differently. And
they'll never ask him those questions, though.
No, of course not, because they're hard, because they require actual law intelligence. It would require a lawyer with him. And I'm sorry, but that's the truth. If you presidents at moments like this don't know exactly, they can only push their powers to a certain extent. The only time that I think Trump went a step further and he invoked the Emergency Manufacturing Act, which I forget what the name is, but it's the one where he can literally say to a manufacturing company, you're no longer producing what you're producing, or producing what I ask you to produce, and you're going to do it at the rate that I want you to do it. And that's right. The only time I ever saw him, and the only time we've ever done that in American history was in World War II. So
yep.
That was the only power trip that I saw from him. And it was to the best advantage, because now we're the ventilator sellers of the world. Thank God. And that's the thing. And I don't understand why he does. This is not brought up more. Europe failed to provide hospital beds and care for their own citizens. Not one American citizen was denied a healthcare bed or any therapeutic medications or any kind of ventilator of any which way they needed it at any given time. Every American who's out there thinking that they're going to die from this, you are going to have the best healthcare in the world when you catch this, if you catch this, and you will serve, and 99% of all of you will survive this. So it is not, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be careful, don't do our due diligence and not do what we need to do. But at the end of the day, we succeeded in many ways.
Yes, we did succeed. And I think it's funny because they can't admit it, and they're not even happy about that success, because
yeah,
it's
and by the
success.
Way, and that's and really they're downplaying dangerous. The European rise in cases. They're really downplaying that, because they know if they don't downplay that, then the Europeans, who did everything right, quote unquote, but they're now having issues. So it's like, it doesn't matter whether, I mean, again, the shutdown wasn't to stop the spread of coronavirus. The shutdown was to stop hospitalization rates going through the roof. That was the reason for the shutdown. The cure is not to stay in your house, in your bedroom, and thinking to yourself you're going to die. That is not the solution. That is actually the best way to kill your emotional health, as well as a way to kill you and your physical health.
Yep, I completely agree. So what are you looking forward to next
week? I'm on vacation starting Tuesday, so it'll be great. Yes.
Nice. Yeah, so nice. Are you watching the
final debate? I will be watching the final debate on my vacation, and I will probably be in angry mode, because who's doing it? I think ABC is doing it next time, right? Yeah, okay, great.
I believe so. Or the
you
moderator.
Know, because ABC is owned by Disney, they should just have Mickey Mouse ask the questions, because that's how I feel.
He'll ask hard questions like, do you prefer me or Donald?
I just feel like if you put Mickey Mouse to ask the questions, then, at least it would be an entertaining debate.
Well, yes. And then Trump will tell Mickey that he's like the
Yeah,
best
well, and that
mouse
and it's like,
ever.
and Mickey, I want all your theme parks open. I want to give you all the money. You will have the best year in your life next year. You're gonna do great economically, capitalistically. You're gonna be fantastic. Should I be elected president?
That'll be huge.
So, and actually, that's a big issue. Disneyland in California is having major issues with reopening because of Governor Newsom's what I would call restrictions is ridiculous. I
Restrictions.
mean, you can't afford your major corporations, the ones that provide the bread and butter of your taxes, to basically go under such restrictions. They're gonna go out of business or they're gonna leave. And you can already see the mass exodus. Miami, by the way, if everyone doesn't know this, we're going through a housing boom in Miami, because everyone's leaving New York and everyone's leaving San Francisco.
That concerns me because then all the liberals come over here and
Yeah, but
protect
I
our
think that
state.
there's, but I also think that by doing that, I hope that they realize, wow, there's a different way of doing governance that isn't government controlled. Because we show them that the Florida way is a workable way. There is, it's not like, we don't have to be New York in order to be successful.
Yeah, I'm not too sure people get that. You would think that deductive reasoning exists and people would put two and two together, but I'm
That's
not too
true.
sure.
But hey, listen, at the end of the day, we're Southerners. We're welcoming. We will welcome and we're going to give good hospitality.
Florida is not a
Have
Southern
you
thing.
been?
I'm sorry to tell you. We're more
Well,
Northeast
Miami is.
culturally.
Miami is not the rest of
Culturally,
the state. I come.
you have a lot of Rust Belt transplants in the rest of the state, so it's not like you were talking about this real Southerners, with the exception of St. Augustine and
Well, in
Tallahassee maybe,
Jacksonville.
but everything below that, even then there's a lot of
Jen.
trans like Midwest
But we love our
transplant
Midwesterners
there.
anyway. I've
Yeah, please continue coming.
You vote the right way, you have the
Yes, we approve.
mentality. So I think that you're gonna see it's, at the end of the day, it's just gonna be a wonderful situation. I think that we will maintain, we're happy to have, well, remember, we have to be happy because we lost a lot of sales revenues this year due to the pandemic, and we're not gonna have all the events that we usually have. So most of our revenue this year for the state is gonna be gathered by property taxes. So please come over, pay our taxes. Great, thanks.
Come on over,
I think, and that's your
baby.
biggest issue. Actually, San Francisco is having a huge issue with that because their tax revenues are down by over 30%, and it's not just sales tax, it's also their property taxes. So they're going to have a major issue as far as trying to produce, here's a therapist that we can no longer afford to give you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Well, Carlos, thanks for coming on the show. Have a great
No
Friday,
problem.
and
Have a
we'll talk
great
to you
one.
soon.
Bye.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you, Carlos, again for being on the show. It was really an interesting conversation. Guys, make sure you are following us on Instagram and Facebook. Remember, you can hear our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or wherever you hear your podcasts. We have several episodes. We've been doing this since spring 2020. So if you are behind, catch up. A lot of good content. It's been definitely an interesting year for the show. But we thank you for your support and your continued enthusiasm for this program. So make sure you follow us on all our socials and make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. So, guys, thank you for tuning in. Remember, we're not your dad's political news show. So spread the word, tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your sister, tell your friend, tell your boyfriend, tell whoever you want. But share, like, and subscribe. Thanks so much, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.